Hello, and welcome to Six Page Scripts, the podcast for screenwriters by screenwriters.
Here's how it works. You send a script that's between 2 and 10 pages to submit at sixpagescripts.com, and we select one to table read on our show every week.
Then we workshop the script, offering our creative and literary feedback, just like it's done in a development office or a writer's room.
Our goal with this show is really to bring the screenwriting community together, celebrating each other's works and talents, and providing another avenue for you and your scripts to be discovered.
I'm your host, Mitch Olson, and today at the table for our very first read, we have an untitled script by Liz Shad. Reading with me, as always, are three of my dear screenwriting friends, Laura, Jason, and Kelly, who are just responsible, talented, and hardworking enough to be on this show, but not enough that I'd let them watch my child.
That's a good choice. I'm not good with children.
And also, I wouldn't want to watch your kid, even right, if I was good at it.
Yeah. Like, you'd have to pay me a lot.
But I wouldn't even take money. I just wouldn't do it out of spite at this point.
I would do a great job, but I refuse adamantly.
Now this sounds like it's about my kid. Like, I'm feeling personally attacked right now.
As you should, because it is about your kid.
He's the sweetest kid on the planet, except right now, because we're sleep training him, which you guys... If you ever plan on having kids, good luck.
Well, shit, boss. Walk me through it. I feel like I need it in this fucking
world. I know. Can an adult be sleep trained?
Yeah. Help me. How do I do it?
Okay. This is great. See, what you're going to do is you're going to do the same routine leading up to your bedtime every night. Ooh. Right? Same routine. So if you take a bottle or you take a bath or you get your jammies on, like same flow, right? Problem is that, you know, 2 hours later, he's up looking to eat again because that's what he's learned to be like, to put himself back to sleep. That's what he's learned. It's like, I can't put myself back to sleep. I need the bottle to put me back to sleep. I need you walking around the room with me in your arms.
Okay. I totally understand that feeling.
You get walked around the room with a bottle?
That's well, just asleep? Needing the bottle to go back to sleep.
yes. Yes.
Speaking of the bottle... This is where we would normally have a listener shout out section, but obviously this is our pilot episode. If you want to help out with the podcast, if you go to sixpagescripts.com, click the donate button, you can donate to our beer fridge and get a shout out on this section in any of our upcoming podcasts, or you can just donate normally and give us cold hard cash. But I think Mitch had someone that he wanted to shout out just to show some appreciation for the help that they've given us leading up to the creation of this podcast.
Yeah. Obviously, I want to thank my wife for, one, allowing me to use our hard-earned cash, cold cash, to invest in this show. Also, I want to thank her because she watches our crazy 10-month-old while I'm up here recording for hours at a time, which is incredibly helpful. I just got to say, you know, we share an Amazon account, and every time I buy something for the show, an email pops up into both of our inboxes, and she'll be like, hey, what is this hard drive for? And I'm like, oh, well, you know, Kelly needed a hard drive. And she just rolls with it. She's like, okay, cool. And so
what you know. You're saying is you have an easy out. If you ever want to buy anything for yourself, you can just say it's for the show and you're good.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. No questions asked.
It's amazing.
Hey, boss, I'm going to need a crossbow for episode 4. So if you could just.
Okay, I will let her know that this is the crossbow episode.
Well, we talked about it, you know.
Yeah,
in the meeting.
Oh yeah.
I want one of those flamethrowers that Elon Musk makes.
Okay. Laura, would you like me to buy anything on Amazon that we can justify for the show?
I'm sorry, my brain is not working.
Okay, good. No, that's easy.
Okay. Maybe some 5-hour energy.
I just want to thank Hope, my wife, for supporting me and supporting this crazy endeavor that we have and sort of just letting me do my thing.
Congratulations to our first listener. Shout out Hope Olson for helping out with the pod. You've been great. You know, buying me the hard drive, getting Jason his crossbow, getting Laura some 5-hour energy. We could really keep using those donations. So don't give up now. That's what I'm saying.
Sweet.
Thank you.
Breaking news bulletin.
Before we get into the script today, we have a little bit of news that we'd like to talk about. Have you guys heard of Stage 32 before?
Yeah.
No. What's that?
Okay. Stage 32 is like a social media platform for filmmakers. It's like the Facebook of filmmaking, right? Except better. They're associated with Indie Film Hustle, which is cool, which is how I know them. Subscribe. I guess I'm a member of Stage 32, so I get their blog updates. But I came across this super cool article called The Case for Creating an Audio Drama as Proof of Concept. And I was like, hey, six-page scripts, what's up? It was saying, you know, instead of shooting a short film or a sizzle reel or something like that, it was talking about how maybe, you know, Hollywood now is paying more attention to, and I didn't read the whole thing, I just skimmed it, but it was saying that Hollywood is now paying attention to podcasts, especially narrative podcasts, and it cited a few in there, and I'll put the article in our social media bios and stuff so that people can check it out. But yeah, and there are so many benefits to that, right? I mean, cost being one of them.
Right. Cost and experimentability. Mm-hmm. Like if you want to try something mm-hmm. that is a little unorthodox, you know.
Right. Yeah. Like if you write something that's big budget, but you really can't afford to film a big budget thing, like you could just record the audio and it'll get the point across and people can kind of imagine what that movie might look like. And that's really cool.
Yeah. I think that's exactly it, Laura. Like, you know, prospective directors will see it the way they want to see it in a way, instead of like, if I shot at my mom's basement, it's like automatically clown college bullshit, mm-hmm. you know,
but yeah.
you know, in their mind, they can paint it the way, oh, this is how I would do it. And I would use a cinematographer. And like, mm-hmm. I see a great deal of applicability there, as well as just lowering the bar in general for, you know, barrier to entry.
Yeah. And I mean, we talk all the time, right, about eliminating risk, and you don't have to run the risk of somebody seeing it and being like, oh, this is a shitty production, and not right. seeing the script because of that. You know, this makes the podcast version as opposed to a short film version or a sizzle reel makes it more about the writing itself, which is really what I think producers, especially at this early stage where they're buying something, really care about. The story, mm-hmm. the characters, you know, what's the voice like? Those are the things that really matter. And if you got access to voice, especially like our very own Jason Faust, yeah, then I think it's great.
Yeah. And you won't have, you know, if you are trying to make a short film with a really great script, but you don't, that's your first time doing it, you won't have to be distracted by the bad visuals or whatever it is, like just the mediocre filmmaking, when you can just focus on the really great script that you've spent so much time on.
And if it just happens to be 2 to 10 pages, right? Let's say you get to 6 pages and you're like, this is perfect as it is. There is a podcast that deals with that medium specifically.
There is.
What is it? What is it?
It's because us.
I feel like I need to. Yeah.
Oh, shit. Today's 6-page script, we have an untitled short presented by Liz Shad. Thank you, Liz, for your submission. Today's 6-page script calls for only 2 roles. We have 1 for Miss Tanya and 1 for Miss Carla. Who's thirsty?
Well, I'm always thirsty, but I don't know if I want to.
I'm the only lady here, so I will humbly take one.
Well, I didn't want to typecast.
That's sexist. That's sexist.
Very.
Okay, you guys be the girls.
Kelly, I think you're the most feminine. You should be the opposite. You should be. You should do it. Right.
I agree. No, I agree with both of those things. Yeah.
Oh, so you and me.
Okay, so Mitch and Kelly, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll be the one who doesn't say sus, because I feel like that's definitely a more Kelly line.
Okay, so today we have Kelly reading for Tanya, and Carla will be played by the boss, Mitch.
Boom. Let's go. And as always, Jason with his sweet, smooth.
Swoot. It's sweeter than sweet. It's sweet, baby.
Yeah, sweeter than sweet. It's sweet. Jason Faust narrating for us today. Are you going to get tired of narrating ever?
Probably not.
Yeah, you just love it, don't you?
Kind of, yeah. All right.
Whenever you're ready, let's take it away.
Fade in. Exterior. Atlanta street, night. Establishing shot of a calm inner city neighborhood at night. The street sign says Moreland Avenue. Fade two. Exterior. Atlanta streets contiguous. The street is lined with different homes of varying styles. All are in complete disarray. This is not a high-income area. A few people wander up and down the streets. A low bass rhythm can be heard from a passing car. Cut two. Exterior. Craftsman's home. Night. Pop, pop. Shots are heard from the inside of the craftsman's home. The windows illuminate with each pop. Then silence. Suddenly, two women, Tanya and Carla, 20s, burst out of the doorway and haul ass across the street. Soon after, an older man with a handgun pursues. Cut to exterior Atlanta street, night. The two women run across the street. Tanya trips, but Carla pulls her up.
Come on, you got this.
They hop a fence. Cut to exterior Atlanta street, night. They land in the next yard. A dog barks as it runs towards them. Chain stops the dog just short of the girls. Carla and Tanya cautiously inch their way to the front door. They open it, letting themselves out. The two hide behind an abandoned gas station and stop to breathe. Carla scans the area. All clear.
Stay low.
Interior, abandoned gas station, night. As the women enter the building, they see pillows and mattresses set up from previous tenants. The room is empty.
We can't stay here.
Shut up.
We can't. He's been here with us.
Tanya turns to Carla, palms outstretched.
Give it to me.
What? No, fuck that.
There's no time. Give me the bag.
Frustrated, Carla takes a sandwich bag of pills out of her backpack, pockets them, and tosses the backpack to her sister. Tanya puts the bag in her pocket. Exterior, gas station, continuous. Tanya and Carla exit, prepared to split ways. Suddenly, the man jumps out from behind a bump. Seeing them, he lets out an emphatic yell. Now we see him up close. It's obvious he's strung out and angry.
Are you fucking kidding me?
The man aims his weapon, but the women throw dirt in his face and run in opposite directions. Thrown, the man wipes the dirt out of his eyes. When he's able to see, he decides to pursue Tanya in the backpack. Tanya is much faster than him and leaves the man in the dust. He heaves as he attempts to keep up, his face turning red with exertion. Exterior, Atlanta street, night. Carla looks behind her. She tears down the street, picking up her pace. She is alone. Turning the corner, she beeps her keys to unlock her car. Interior, Carla's car, night. As Carla gets into the busted-up Dodge Charger, she gets a call. Putting it on speaker, she shifts the car into gear.
Where are you?
I'm coming. Hold tight.
Hurry. I don't know where that dude went. Oh, shit.
A loud bang. The line goes dead. Carla tries to call back, but it goes straight to voicemail. She uses the Find My Friends app to locate her sister and drives off down the road. She puts a bag of pills in the glove box. Interior, Carla's car, night. As she gets within 500 feet of the location, she sees the man standing over Tanya, gun drawn. Carla sees red, blood pumping, lays her foot on the accelerator. Before he realizes what's happening, Carla's car strikes him with full speed. They crash into an alley wall. Silence. Exterior, Carla's car, night. Carla crawls out of her crumpled car, dabbing at a gash on her forehead. Her leg is also clearly injured. The man is sandwiched between her car and the wall, dead. Carla spits at him.
Motherfucker.
Turning around, she sees Tanya running toward her. When she reaches Carla, she helps her stand.
Oh my god. You okay?
Looking at the car.
What the hell were you thinking?
I was thinking about you.
That was so reckless.
She helps Carla sit down on the edge of the curb and starts looking through the car. She finds a screwdriver and uses it to take off the license plate.
Check the trunk.
Tanya opens the trunk and pulls out a gasoline canister. She gives Carla a look.
You need to stop being so dramatic.
Just do it. My prints are everywhere.
Fine.
There's a little bit of fuel left in it. She pours it on the man and the car, ignites it with her Zippo, and drops it on the car. It erupts into flames.
Happy?
Carla nods. The two sisters sit, mesmerized by the glow of the pyre. The street is silent, aside from the crackling of flames. Carla looks over at Tanya.
For a moment, I really thought I was going to lose you. The way he was standing over you, I don't know what I would have done if...
I had it covered.
You didn't. We need to be more careful.
Okay, Mom. Whatever you say. What are you thinking?
We lay low for a week, post up here, let Bobby and Carlos handle the traffic, maybe bring on Teddy.
Teddy's an idiot.
Then we bring in Lewis.
He's sus. He stole $500 worth of product.
Damn it. We'll figure it out. Let's get out of here.
They flee the scene. Cut to black. Well done, Liz.
Today's episode of the pod is brought to you by SwiftRecruiter. In these troubling times, finding the right employees for your business isn't as easy as it should be. That's why SwiftRecruiter utilizes the dark web's most powerful matching technology to find qualified candidates swiftly. Find candidates for your company's open positions before potential candidates even know they want the job. SwiftRecruiter's AI Alexa-enabled home listening devices combine millions of unsuspecting home networks and listen in on private conversations to determine the best, most qualified fit for your company's position. Once SwiftRecruiter finds the best potential matches for your company, its Trojan horse viruses peer into those candidates' lives, giving you unprecedented access previously only available to the CIA under the 2001 Patriot Act. You can access information like your candidate's Amazon wish list, family pictures, how many times that particular candidate maybe went to Taco Bell that week. I mean, really, the options are limitless. And I'll tell you something, we've used SwiftRecruiter on this pod a lot, haven't we?
That's how I got you guys.
Yeah, exactly. It's no wonder that 3 out of 5 employers trust SwiftRecruiter for all of their dark web hiring needs, including this pod, six-page scripts.
Yeah, my life was a wreck because of SwiftRecruiter, and now it's great.
So look, if you're interested in SwiftRecruiter's powerful AI dark web technology, it's very simple. Just download a tour, learn how to create a proxy IP address, and visit SwiftRecruiter through a I can't disclose over the web location.
SwiftRecruiter.us.
.independentuk.com. SwiftRecruiter. Check it out.
Okay, who wants to start? Who wants to start?
I could start.
Do it up, L Dog.
So one of the first things that I noticed was directorial, like trying to direct within the script, I think, is something that is common with a lot of beginning or screenplays, but that's something that you typically want to avoid. That was just like one of the more technical things that I noticed.
And it happened a lot at the beginning too, which is problematic.
Because if a director sees that, then they're like, well, if you're the director, then bibbidi-bibbidi-bit.
You're talking about the establishing shot. Mm-hmm. And
establishing like shot and like cut to.
Yeah.
I don't mind the cut twos. I'm a big cut two guy myself because I like white space. It makes it look cleaner, in my opinion. But some people don't use them properly or they overuse them. And it really, I mean, if you're talking about turning this into a feature, like imagine how many lines that sucks up,
right?
Page space wise.
And you know? To me, cut two is more of a dramatic cut than just going into the next scene.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So if it's like cut two every time, then it's like, ha, ha, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which is a lot.
Can I address, you kind of alluded to like it, the cut twos taking away from potential dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
That was a serious thing that I noticed. It wasn't really until the very end when they lit the car on fire that I was like, okay, I can see the dynamic relationship between these two characters. But like a lot of their lines didn't match the intensity of the scenario that they were in. Like it seemed like they were like being sarcastic or trying to be funny or whatever. And again, like I said, it might work. Don't get me wrong. But for me, as I was reading the lines, I was like, you know, there's explosions. There's a man that's strung out trying to fucking kill them. And they're over here. Like at one point, Tanya like jokingly calls her mom. Which I get, you know, is, you know, they probably have that relationship because it seems like they're sisters, but just, I don't know. It was something that I noticed. I don't know if y'all felt the same way. Maybe like that kind of jokey relationship would be fleshed out over a longer period of time throughout this, a potential series or maybe even a longer script, but like trying to get that like humorous, like almost banter like dialogue for me with the amount of intensity in such a short amount of time just didn't hit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It didn't distract me so much, but I definitely see what you're talking about. It kind of like lessens the drama of what's actually going on when they're kind of just joking. But it also made me kind of think when you were talking about that maybe it's just because they're so used to going through this kind of situation. Like, I don't think they're lighting a car every night, but I think that this is not the first time that they've had to run from someone. Because either they were doing something or they were being
And I'll add to that. I definitely can see it working. Like, I'm not saying that it's like, oh, this is fucked, you know, because you get the right actors and you get the right production, and like, yeah, it would hit for sure. But I could also see, you know, maybe like a Michael Bay-esque person reading it and seeing all the explosions and wanting that more than the funny.
Right.
Yeah. It's, I hesitate to call it a strength. It does have flexibility in terms of like what certain directors would do with it. However, probably my biggest issue is that I see this almost as like a buddy cop kind of dynamic. Right. And yet, first of all, their names are Carla and Tanya. And I was like, I don't know if that really rolls off my tongue the way I kind of want it to. And also, we don't really get a whole lot of characterization either visually of them when they're first introduced. It's just like two young women, Carla and Tanya. They're kind of 20, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like, is one of them more professional? Is one of them more X? Is one of them more Y? I don't really get a whole lot from all of their lines until the ending of which one is which or how and what way they're different. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot of lost opportunity to characterize these characters and what little dialogue we do have. It seems to be all business. Right. And I feel like one character should be all business and the other one should be more of a person, or I don't know. There's a bunch of different ways to do it, but there's no contrast between the two, like really strongly. Right. So as a result, when we get this touching moment where it's like, for a moment, I thought I was going to lose you. I just thought these two people were working professionals working together. I didn't realize they had a relationship until that moment, right?
Well, it does mention in there that they're sisters, but if you're watching this on screen, you're not going to know that unless they look alike, which isn't the description isn't giving, you know?
Exactly, so. Exactly. Just from the way they're presented in purely visual terms, I don't get a lot of information about these guys.
Yeah.
Gals. These gals.
Not at the beginning, but we actually get more description of the guy who's chasing them. Mm-hmm. I did think that he needed a stronger introduction as well. We just see old man kind of coming out the house after they are like running out. So I think that he needs, you know, we know he's old. We know he's actually, we don't know that he's strung out looking until later when he actually comes after them. So I think that that's a good point for all the characters, that there needs to be something to help us understand who they are. Unless this is something that's from the middle of a script, like they've already been established and this just happens to be a 6-page sequence that we're looking at. But
yeah, it's hard to tell, right? It does feel like the intro of a feature or a cold open to a show, just in the way that it's laid out. But I'll agree with Kelly first off saying that I do think that there are lines at the end, like the okay mom, the sarcasm. Like the other line that threw me is when Carla laughs after Tanya's like, what the hell were you thinking? And she's like, haha, I was, you know, haha, I was thinking about you. You know, it doesn't feel like a laughing moment there, right? Especially after her previous line is motherfucker and she spits in his face, essentially. And then the whole you need to stop being so dramatic, like these, it feels, you're right. I mean, I'm not sure what the tone is yet. And in 6 pages, I'm not sure that we're supposed to fully understand this. I mean, you think of movies like Rush Hour or, what's that movie with?
Lethal Weapon vibe.
Lethal Weapon. Yeah. Lethal Weapon. Bad Boys, right? Like you kind of are plugged into these action sequences and it's not until the sort of dust settles that we get the relationship between them and everything like that. But even still, even if this is sort of like a Bad Girls, right? Let's think of it like that. As the car's burning, it's like, let's make jokes about mom, you know?
Yeah. And like, which one? Tanya almost died. Carla almost died wrecking her car. They just killed a man. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of pills on them. They are being very, very chill about this entire thing, which did, when I was first reading this, it did kind of like make me a little confused.
Right. And I will say that's a definite strength of this script is the intensity of it.
Mm-hmm. But then the dialogue kind of,
yeah, and that's why I like wanted to address it, is because like what it does so well is watered down by the dialogue that just doesn't match the tone. And it's not that like you can't have that buddy cop dynamic where they're joking, you know, trying to give the moment of levity during chaos. Like, everyone wants that. You know, it's a trope for sure, but we don't know enough about what's going on, and it seemed like it's more heavy on the intense action. So that's, if I were to suggest anything to this writer, I would say, like, if this is the opening of a feature or a cold open, like, keep it heavy on the action and flesh out the personality jokey dynamic later on.
Yeah, it's almost like an opening hook part two, right? When we get the jokiness aspect of it, but it feels like it's too merged. And this goes back to Jace's point, which I also agree with, which is we don't get enough about them in their description or anything like that to be able to make that conclusion here to where the dialogue would, even if it is going to be a little jokey, it doesn't stick, right? And I'm hesitant to even call it jokey so much as it's just light in comparison to, you know, or compared with or compared to whatever it is. I always fuck those up. But when you compare it to the intensity, like you guys are talking about. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I wanted to bring up is I did want to say on the side of the characters, like throughout the whole script, it does feel like Carla's the one in charge.
Yeah.
You know, she's the one picking Tanya up when she falls. She's the one being like, stay low. And then at the end, she's like, check the trunk. We're going to burn this motherfucker. You know what I mean? So she's definitely – that part I think is at least clear, you know. In terms of establishing a dynamic, I think it definitely there's definitely room for improvement there. But purely from like a who's captaining the ship standpoint, like it's definitely Carla, right? So if this is a dual lead, like this is the Chris Rock or – you know, this is the Will Smith. Like there's definitely someone who's, even with Duel, there is one person who seems to like be running the show, which is a good thing.
Yeah. And I feel like that needs to be played up a little bit more, like maybe not her being like doing more things to show that she's in control. Cause I think that the few tiny little actions that she does in this sequence makes that clear. But I think Tanya needs something in the opposite direction. She needs more to not make her just seem like another person with the sister that's in charge, but she needs to be kind of her own character as well.
Sure. How did you guys feel about the timing and the pace? Well, those are two different things. Let's talk pace first. What did you think about the pacing of it?
I referenced Michael Bay earlier, and that's kind of like what I was getting from reading this is like a lot of like explosions and
it's Bad Boys. It's Bad Boys, but with girls.
Right. Which is fine, but it just is the problem for me with this is that all of the action that seems like pivotal cliffhanger moments, right? Like the scene where they ran him with a car, or the scene where they got chased by him, or the scene where they lit them on fire, all seem like moments where you could pause and like go to commercial by themselves because they're so intense. But because they happen right next to each other, back to back to back, it's like the effect of each one seems watered down because you're taking into consideration all these major moments happening at once.
And that even applies if it's a feature, right? You know, I mean, you have these sequences that don't feel like it's like intense moment, intense moment, intense moment rather than. Yeah, I can see that for sure.
It starts with gunshots and ends with a car on fire and a dead guy. So like it's a lot of big things and it definitely gets bigger. But I think that there's maybe too fast. Like it might just need one.
It feels like a good set piece. You know what I mean? If you're thinking about an action movie, you know, like even something like Under Siege or something like that, you know, it feels like there's a beginning, middle, and end to it. It feels like there's a second act break. It feels like there's a climax. So it feels like a little movie in and of itself, which is why I feel like it's a great 6-page script submission because it does feel complete. It is a set piece that introduces us this, whether it's TV or film. And it does escalate in the right direction, you know? But I hear you. I hear you.
See, I don't know. This feels to me like a chase scene with no chasing. Because the guy comes out, like they leave the house, the guy comes out. Then we get a little bit of a quiet time where they're chilling at the gas station. Then he pops out again. Then they throw dirt in his face and then they get away from him. He tries to chase the one girl, but it clearly says she's too fast for him. So now she's good, even though she ends up not being good later.
And we kind of jump away from him. We stay on Carla.
Right. Who just sits in a car moving stuff around. Right. It's almost like a chase scene with no chasing.
Right.
Yeah, that's I'm really glad you brought that up, because that's one of my biggest notes is like, how is he finding them? And I honestly think it makes this more intense if, like, not that he doesn't need to be like, oh, I'm looking at their footprints and I know their shoe size and all. He doesn't need to be like, you know, professional or anything like that. But it's like, first off, if you know he's going to be at this potential gas station looking for you, why are you going there? You know, it's like when people make bad decisions in horror movies, you know. I think there's a version of it where he is a little bit more capable and we spend a little time with him, potentially a line or two or a quick moment of him searching and saying, you know, maybe he's got two options and it's left down the street or right down the street. But you know what? The gas station's down that way and I'm going to go see if they're there. And then you can cut back to the gas station where they're like, we can't stay here, or, you know, the little apartment. They're in an apartment, right? Is that what it was? Where they got the beds all hooked up?
No, that was, I think, the gas station.
Yeah, I was confused.
Oh, there. Maybe it's like an abandoned gas station, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, so they're at this abandoned gas station. It's like, oh, well, he knows that we've been here before. And I think if we get a moment of him turning a corner and seeing the gas station before we get to that point where it's like, we can't stay here, he knows about this place, it amplifies the intensity of that in a way that I think speaks to Jace's point where they'll feel more chased.
Yeah. I agree. I think, yeah, definitely need to have at least a little bit more on the antagonist so that we're afraid of him as much as they are, you know?
And put them in dire straits, too. I mean, amp up the antagonist is one thing, but, like, when she falls and trips, like, maybe she's got a limp. So maybe when she is running from him, she may be faster, but she's not as capable to make that, you know, and show him closing in rather than her gaining distance. It makes it feel more intense that way, too. We did pacing, right? We talked about pacing a little bit. I think it's fairly well paced, but I think it can be more intense, like Jace was saying. You know, make it feel chase. You know, it doesn't feel entirely chasey right now. And I think that's because we're, one, they're too well equipped, and two, he's too ill equipped. And I think if you sort of find a way to make him more capable and then utilize the fact that she's tripped and maybe hurt herself and things like that, or he gets the jump on them, you know, they have to make a miraculous escape. I think those are great notes.
What about this? Pop, pop, right? Scene one, Tanya takes one of the leg.
Sure.
And then all of a sudden he has a blood trail follow, right?
I love that.
And she has a limp and won't be able to run super fast. Maybe she'll be able to run a little bit. I was just saying, yeah, maybe it's just a graze, so she's still able to run, but she does have that limp like we were talking about before. And then that kind of solves the...
That does solve one problem, but then it presents another, which is, why then is Carla ditching her?
That's true.
You know, like, why are we going separate directions when one of us has a gunshot wound? And why are you leaving the backpack with the one who's less capable of running? I mean, you'd think you'd switch it at that point, right? Like, Carla would be the one with the pills or the backpack because she's more capable of being chased.
Well, that's what I was wondering, because you were saying that Carla felt like she was in charge, but it was Tanya who was like, give me the backpack, we don't have time.
Mm. Oh, that's true.
All of a sudden became boss-like, right?
But at that time, when she said that, Carla took the pills out, pocketed them. So was that like a switcheroo kind of thing? Like, you see the bag, and so you're going to go after the one with the bag, but the pills that you're looking for are with me.
I think so. And I think her line of what? No, fuck that feels good if she's wounded. And she's like, but he won't follow me. Like, he'll follow you or something. I don't know. I don't know that necessarily solves the problem, but you're right. There is sort of a blip there, Jace, about her being in control for sure. Formatting wise, this was super fucking clean.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple typos.
Yeah.
That throughout, but I mean, this is pretty rock solid from, I mean, this is the type of thing that it felt professional, you know, when you read it. Not a whole lot of scene description, lots of clean white space. You know, as a reader who gets this at a production office, there's not a whole lot to skip over and go straight to dialogue. You kind of just do it because it's quick. I have a few more notes, but I want to say first that there's a couple lines in here that I don't really know what they mean. And maybe it's because I'm a little older, but maybe y'all can help me out. Exterior gas station continuous on the top of page 3. Tanya and Carla exit, prepared to split ways. Suddenly the man jumps out from behind a bump.
Okay, I think that was one of the typos. They're at a gas station. I think he jumped out from behind a pump.
Yep.
Okay.
But I mean, y'all know what a bump is, though, right?
Yeah, I'm like, is he jumping out behind a little thing of cocaine? Like, I don't understand what's happening here.
Mm-hmm.
He jumps out and does a bump.
There's two possible typos happening here. He's either doing a bump or coming out from behind a pump.
He's jumping while bumping.
There you go. Let's just combine them.
Like, it's the old jump and bump.
Okay, good. So that's me being an idiot and not being able to figure that out. So that's nice. We already talked about the dialogue, which is good. Okay, I have one question before I get into it. Actually, I'll save this question before the end. Liz does this great thing on page one where it's pop, pop, shots are heard from the inside of the Craftsman home, right? I love that. But then when the gun fires again later, there's no pop. Like, I would, if you're going to use a sound effect, I'd like to see it be used again, you know? Especially since Jason sounds so good when he says pop.
Where's the other gunshot?
A phone. It's a bottom of three. A loud bang, the line goes dead.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, you could bang, the line goes dead, and you're like, whoa, I know what happened.
It seems more like the first instance, not like it, well, it's obviously an onomatopoeia. Don't get me wrong, but it seemed more like it was being used as a literal transition. Like, it's like the pop, pop, like you're in the scene. Whereas the second instance was like more to add suspense instead of it being like a transitory device. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm
not disagreeing with you. I think it would work both ways. But if I'm going to play devil's advocate here, I would say that would probably be her underlying reason for doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that. I guess that's true.
Are we cool with the Find My Friends app?
No.
Well, this brings up a timing issue for me, and this is one of the other things I was going to talk about, but say your piece first, I'll come back.
Well, it's just weird, because like, she gets in the car, pop, my girl sister friend died in my head, right? First thing I do a call, ring, couple rings, goes to voicemail, goes straight to voicemail, okay. But still, I'm screwing around on my phone instead of like getting the hell towards somewhere, right?
She did say that she put the car into gear as she put the phone on speaker. So I think she was in transit when it all happened.
So she's got like an Uber driver. So
oh, yeah, I see that. Yeah.
I guess, yeah.
Is there value in putting the Find My Friends app at the top of the scene, though? So she knows where she's going.
Mm, yeah.
She hops in the busted charger, pulls up My Friends app. Because that would be the first thing you would do, right? I mean, even at the top of the scene, she still doesn't know where her sister is. So it's like, if you're going to hop in the car and shift in the gear, you got to know where you're going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, it eliminates, if she does that, then it eliminates a timing issue for me. Because you hear the loud bang and the line go dead. And then she pulls up her friend's app, figures out where to go, and then arrives there. And she gets within 500 feet of the location. And he's still got the gun drawn. I'm like, how much time passed between all of that from the gunshot, you know?
Well, I wonder, and Kelly and Laura, y'all can probably speak to this. Is there like a preferred driver function on like Uber or Lyft or something like that? Where it's like, yo, I really like that driver. I'm gonna hit him up, put him on my
favorite. I don't know. That's a great idea, but I don't think that exists. No.
No, it doesn't.
Damn. Because I was thinking like if Uber or Lyft has like a preferred driver like favorites list where it's like, yo, that guy was awesome. I'll favorite him, and next time I need a ride, I'll send him a thing. And then that way, if Tanya jumps in the car, a preferred driver is requesting a pickup. But you know what I mean? Like, then it's a little more organic than just like, where are you? Oh, I'm coming. I'll be right there. Let me find you on my app. You know what I mean? Like, almost like a sheet to ping first.
Hey, Jason, it seemed like a lot of it, like, you know, and definitely what Mitch said, I highly advocate for that, like moving the technicalities up. But it did seem like a lot of her doing that was she was trying to like verify that there's logistics to this. And in doing that, like by overemphasizing the logistics of it, it made it the lapse in time more apparent. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like by putting in all these details, like she does this, she does that, she looks on Find My Friend. Like then we now know that a lot of time has passed.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if she does the friend, if what happens is bang, line goes dead, she calls back, goes straight to voicemail, the car rounds a corner, boom, she's 500 feet away from the guy who's got a gun drawn.
Right.
That eliminates the timing issue altogether. The other version of it is eliminate the My Friends app altogether. And instead of Tanya being like, where are you? It's like, dude, I'm at the corner of whatever, whatever. How far are you?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. Like they have a, something as simple as that, or like meet me at that place, our place or something, where it's a very quick, you know where you're going. That's where I'm going to be kind of thing. And maybe they don't get there, but she sees them in that alley. And like, that's when it all happens.
Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely think. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. I think it eliminates the timing, and it eliminates Jace's and Kelly's and yours, sort of how much time passes in between this, all of ours.
Yeah.
Issue with that. So that's good. That's solid. Solid solutions there. What else do you guys got?
I have a qualm, maybe. Sure. So at the end, they've just done all these things. Mm-hmm. They are sitting there watching a fire burn and a man's body burn, and they are not in a rush. And this kind of goes back to like they were being very light throughout the whole thing. But I mean, it's in Atlanta. It's on Moreland Avenue where all this started. So like, it's not a quiet area. I feel like someone would hear a loud crash and see a fire, even if it was the middle of the night. So I'm wondering why they're not in more of a hurry to leave. And there's not really necessarily an answer that we can give for that. That's just kind of a question for the writer, I guess. Like, why aren't they more freaked out by everything that's happened, and why aren't they trying to get somewhere safe?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I mean, I think we all felt that too, with the lull in intensity in the dialogue, but also it's like, why are they being so nonchalant about getting out of here when there's a car burning in the middle of Atlanta?
Yeah.
After gunshots.
Right.
Good. Anybody else feel that way?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was just a device to like transition into or like to leave a cliffhanger off. I didn't think about the repercussions of it, but I agree that, you know, just from a logistical standpoint, if you're trying to, it seems like the tone of this is grounded in realism with some kind of drug deal gone awry. And so they would definitely be smarter than that than like blowing up a vehicle. And even if they weren't, they'd be fucking scared because they would be in this whole new world that they know nothing about, right? Like, let's just say they stumbled upon this. I don't know their experience before this. We would ideally find that out.
They do say they need to be more careful. So I do think that this is something that's gone on before. But something went wrong with this one, I think.
Right. And they would be terrified. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think there's a version of it, too, where it's like the two sisters don't sit mesmerized by the glow. You know, the street is silent aside from the crackling flames. I think it's maybe it's, you know, as the fire crackles, the two girls walk, like Carla helps Tanya limp away. And then you cut to new scene, safe and sound. For a moment, I really thought I lost you. Fuck, that way that he was standing over you, I don't know what I would have done. And, you know, then it makes, now they're not having this weird conversation when the dust is settled. It's like, it's almost like the beginning of the next sequence rather than it feeling like tacked on to the end of the first.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this is absolutely a campfire scene, and they're using this burning husk of a vehicle and a man's body for the campfire. And I see a world where it's a match cut. I mean, they scamper off, match cut to, I don't know, some homeless guys in a fire barrel.
Oh, yeah.
Or like if they're in a nice place, like a fireplace, exactly. Some kind of match cut where they're both looking at it, but they're thinking about the moments before that. There's cinematic ways to do that, right?
Good. So my thing is like, and I hesitate to say a lot of this stuff, but too much stuff in here we've seen before, right? We've seen the flop in a backyard, dog come at you, chain snap right at your face. Like, I've seen that in like 15 movies, you know? Mm-hmm. We've also seen the, oh, killer's coming, I'm gonna throw dirt in his face, you know, to escape. I would urge the writer to come up with nuanced versions of this, right? Like, what if the dog does get off the chain, you know? Or it's not even on a chain and they... I mean, even the let's hop over the fence before the dog bites my ankle off is something that we've seen before, but at least it's more intense than, you know, and again, if she doesn't take a bullet, but the dog gets her as she's going over the fence, like that's a reason to limp, you know? Mm-hmm. And the dirt in the face, like we've seen that so many times, it's like, have them come up with something else to give them an escape plan, you know?
What if they what if they just cough because they might have
the coronavirus?
Yeah.
That's good. That's good. I don't know that that would stop him. He seems like a guy who's already got coronavirus.
Oh, yeah. He's not quarantining himself.
Yeah, no social distancing with this chap. But yeah, so I would aim to find ways to make this, because if I'm sitting here reading this, like as the opening to a feature, I'm thinking to myself, I've seen this movie before. It's got two girls in it, but I've seen it before. And there are ways to nuance it in slight, simple little things like that, which is, you know, do something with the dog that we haven't seen before. Do something with the guy standing right over you, you know, where you don't throw dirt in his eyes. You do something else to get away, you know?
It's two women. The best way to defend yourself against a man is kick him in the nads.
Yeah. There you go.
That's something different. And
ball shot.
Yeah, and like also focuses on the feminist side of it. Like this is a movie that we've seen with guys a million times, but it is kind of a new twist, but it's kind of relying on the same.
Yeah, I mean, I think if we were to have read that version of it, we might still be talking about the same note, but you're right. You're heading in the right direction there. But what if there's something like, does this take place? Yeah. First off, they're in a gas station and they're outside of the gas station. Maybe this scene happens inside of the gas station. The guy doesn't jump out from behind a pump, right? He's standing in the doorway right as they're about to leave and the lights are on. He's got the gun drawn and one of them shuts off the lights, you know, so he can't see.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think there are ways that they can get out of their issues.
What if they also, I mean, to me, the strung out kind of psychotic killers felt a little cliche in a way. They could, another thought building off of what you said is they could play around with the expectations of the person coming after them. Like maybe he could be kind of calm and collected, almost like No Country for Old Men. Yeah. Even though, you know, obviously I just referenced that movie, so it's been done, but that guy was his own unique character. I'm just saying like the crazy fucking like, almost Viking, like I don't give a shit killer, is very overdone. And that's why, like when I just saw a man, strung out, like it was easy for me to put like 15 different faces on that because I've seen it.
Yeah. It might be interesting if like, he's the complete opposite of that. Right. Like,
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Suit, clean cut, walking out of a fucking Maybach. I don't know if I said that right, but you know, walking out of a Bentley. I don't know why he's chasing two girls with a, you know, with $500 worth of pills on him. But it could be. I mean, you could amp it up to where the duffel bag's full of pills, and then you might have a guy in a suit and a Bentley chasing after you. You know.
Right, and we don't know who this guy is. We don't like. What you and I were saying, Mitch, at the beginning of this, like you thought that they were being robbed by that guy and I thought they were somehow robbing that guy and then they just robbed the wrong person. So like, I think that there's a lot that we don't know about just the background of this and like who they are.
Yeah.
So, and I don't know if you'll get that within this sequence. You might have to like find that out, the details of it a little bit later, but I think that that's important to know.
And it circles back to what Jace was saying earlier about the characterization aspects of it. I feel like I had one more thing I wanted to say. There were some times where it was hard for me to track the action and some of the slugs aren't consistent, like interior abandoned gas station and then it's exterior gas station. Like I just love for the slugs to be similar.
Abandoned gas station.
Yeah, exactly.
And then what Jason was kind of talking about through the read, tripping up on Carla's car, like you want it to be something that you'll be able to.
I mean, we know it's her car when she beeps. Yeah, it could just be keys. It could just be interior car.
And even that could be a moment to characterize Carla and the duo, interior, the charger, right? That way the director and the set designer is like, oh, this should feel like a unique car instead of like any
fluffy dice on the rear view.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cigarette butts everywhere. Who knows, right?
And that would give us more of who the women are. Like a non-visual way to introduce them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Did that make sense? Okay.
Yeah. All right. I found the part that felt weird to me, which is the exterior Atlanta street night at the top of page two. They land in the next yard. Fine. It could be exterior backyard. You know, they land after, you know, whatever. A dog barks just short of the girls, stops just short of the girls. Carla and Tanya cautiously inch their way to the front door.
That was what my comment was, too. About
like, are they inching their way through the house at this point to the front door? Are they, is this the gate door?
Yeah. I was wondering if she meant the front gate, but.
Yeah.
I think whatever that is just needs to be clarified.
So I think, you know, we got a slug issue here, which could be exterior backyard, you know, random backyard continuous. A dog barks as it runs toward them, change stops, or some sort of nuanced version of that. You know, they get away, you know, hop another fence or, you know, open the gate door or whatever. And then you have another slug, which is exterior street. The two approach an abandoned gas station and stop to breathe. Or maybe you just go straight to exterior gas station there since you're already going to be using it as a set anyway, you know. And then they go inside. I have a feeling that they're supposed to be sneaking across the street here, is what I'm gathering, because she's scanning the area and telling her sister to stay low. So,
have you all seen True Detective?
Oh yeah.
In the first season, you know, my boy Matthew McConaughey is like in the sting operation where he's disguised as a drug dealer, mm-hmm. and. Sorry to ruin that for anyone, but I guess it doesn't ruin it. Anyways, what I'm saying is there's the scene where there's a shootout in the house in the middle of the projects, and like he has to sneak through and like escape, you know. It was the same kind of, yeah, that's exactly what I was like visualizing when I saw this, especially with the explosions and shit. Mm-hmm. But like even in that scene, like it felt like there was like chaos going around, even though it was at the top of the script. You know what I mean?
I'm pretty sure that was all shot in one shot too, wasn't it? If I'm thinking back to it correctly.
It felt very continuous, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Which maybe that's what this is trying to do here, right? But I still think I'm glad you felt that way, because that's good on the writer to make that clear. You're visualizing it, right? I just think there's some logistical issues with the writing about where we are and where we're going that could be a little clearer. But yeah, I think the tone of it is spot on. I love that reference because I think that's fantastic. That's a great scene to sort of look at, and you know, good writers borrow, great writers steal, so I can do it. I don't have anything else. Any of you guys have anything else?
Mm-mm.
No?
Nope.
Okay, so should we rate?
Mm-hmm.
So, Kelly, out of 6, how many pages would you rate this untitled submission?
You know, I'm glad that you called on me, because I was very eager to get to this point. I'm actually going to give it a 4 out of 6, which I think that's still passing. I think it's 66%, right? My two big reasons are the tone of dialogue the tone of action that I mentioned, and I think all of us alluded to. And the second thing is, and what Mitch had said, was a lot of it just felt like it had been done before. So those are my two reasons. Still good, very professionally written, and I really like the idea of this, but I do think it needs some cleaning up.
How about you, Laura?
I will give Liz... I still got to stick with the decimal points, don't I? 4.2 out of... 6 pages.
You got to one up me there just by.
Yeah, I do. I got to one up you a little bit. I like Liz. I like the script a lot. And, but yeah, there were all the things that we discussed, but I think it's pretty solid.
All right. And how about you, boss?
I'm going to agree with Laura and Kelly. I'm going to give it a 4. You know, despite all the things that we said, the lack of nuance in some of this and, you know, some difficult to track action. I just love the idea of a female driven sort of bad boys. You know, it's not Will Smith and Martin Lawrence. It's the Tanya, Carla, whoever plays these. I love to see the opposite of that. Obviously, they're not cops. They're the bad guys. It's not dudes. It's gals. I'm digging it. If I was reading this at a production company, I'd be giving it a I mean, I'd be thinking at this point that I'm excited to read the rest of the script. I would be thinking in my head, I wish it was fresh. I wish it was a little more fresh. Fresher? More fresh? Whatever. But yeah, I think there's room to grow. I think it's off to a great start. I'm pumped. 4 out of 6.
Okay. And as far as myself, I'm going to give it a cool 3 out of 6. Not dunking on it in any way, because I feel like the foundation, the skeleton is definitely there. I'm with the boss. I think the concept is beautiful. I'm a sucker for buddy cop stuff, and I love the subversion of that, not only along the gender lines, but also along the morality lines. I dig it in a big way. However, a key part of that formula functioning is the character work. And I just don't see a lot of that in these opening pages that really gives me a clear sense of their dynamic, of their drives, and of the conflicts that I have to look forward to. This also includes the bad guy. I would like to see something a little different than just like Murder Man. But otherwise, I think the foundation here is really strong. So definitely 3 out of 6 for me. And that's it for our rating and reading for today. Liz, thank you so much for your submission.
You can follow Liz at E to the Liz on both Instagram and Twitter. You can follow us at 6 Page Scripts. Please subscribe and review wherever you get your podcast. And if you're interested in submitting to the show, check us out at 6pagescripts.com. Next week, we'll be reading a dark drama by a talented writer-director, so be sure you tune in. Until then, thanks for listening and happy writing.
Tanya and Carla, Tanya and Carla, Carla and Tanya, exterior.
I'm sorry, Xtilia?
Are you sure you want to be the resident narrator?
Did I stutter?